want to welcome you into episode number 2 of the Main Rundown Pod. As always, I'm Zach Tarenko alongside Jeff Christianberry, back again this week to talk all things sports, wrap up the Maine high school basketball tournament with states this weekend, and we got a lot to get through. But before we do, Jeff, I gotta ask you, the Celtics game from this weekend just absolutely dominated the Warriors. Obviously, you know, later we'll talk a little about that with our guest who we'll mention. But you know, just what a not only an incredible game, but just that is pretty much in my eyes like the precedent of what this season has been for them. It's just been incredible wins, incredible play. It's just, give me a little bit on what you think from the Celtics.
Yeah, I mean, it was a statement win. I mean, they seem to be on a mission right now, and it's hard because, you know, this, if they go on to win the championship, it's a great thing, but it's almost like expected now. Like, we're basically saying this team should win the championship. If they don't, it's a real disappointment. Certainly they should win the Eastern Conference, not just because they're improved from previous years, but the Eastern Conference doesn't look very strong as it has. The addition of Drew Holiday has been a revelation, I think, for the team. My big knock on the Celtics for the last couple of years has been the killer instinct and the lack of it from their stars, especially Tatum. Certainly hasn't been a problem this year so far in the regular season. They're just kind of, you know, breezing through. They're up by what, 7.5, 8 games, something like that, over the second place team, which is amazing. So what'll happen in the playoffs? I don't know. I mean, again, it's a make or miss league. A lot of their strategies is based around 3-pointers, but the additions of Porzingis and Drew Holiday have been great. And, you know, losing guys like Marcus Smart and Grant Williams hasn't really hurt them that much. So that win away into Warriors is almost like a turning point. And you try not to make too big out of a regular season game because a regular season in the NBA is not very, doesn't have a lot of weight. But to see that Warriors team at the end of their dynasty run, almost down by 50 in the first half of any game, let alone being on the road on the East Coast, it says a lot. And for the Celtics to kind of keep hammering them even after halftime said a lot as well. For me, my biggest, again, besides the killer instinct question mark in the playoffs, I do, you know, this is a big year for Joe Mazzulla. Is he the guy, a young guy who's, you know, very interesting personality coaching wise? Does he have the wherewithal not just to win 60, 65 games in the regular season, but go through a 4-round playoff? You know, certainly there'll be favorites in every series in the East. And we get to the NBA Finals, we'll see. If they're playing the Nuggets, they'll definitely won't be the favorites. But if they're playing one of the other teams, if somehow the Suns or the Lakers, somebody else makes it through, they'll be the favorites there too. So how are they going to respond when it comes down to that? It's really exciting to see. But, I mean, it's fun to watch. When every team wins by almost 50, it's great to see. But it's hard not to get excited about what they're looking like. And they should. Again, as we're sitting right here right now, their over-under losses for in the Eastern Conference for me is 2.5 for all three series. I think they would sweep just about everybody, maybe lose a game or two here. Now, the finals are a totally different thing. Not going to put any pressure on them for that. But in the East, they should win or sweep just about every series going forward. So we'll see what happens. I'm ready for the playoffs, though. Like, regular season, like, let's get on with it.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's it's a pretty fair assessment of where they're at right now, and I don't think that that's out of this world, that take. But this week we're going to get right into the rundown segment. We got a lot to talk about. We know we want to, you know, take our time with each of our topics of the week, so we're just going to go right into it. And I'll start us off. I'll keep us, as we talked about, wanting to wrap up the Maine high school basketball tournament, and so we'll start with what was the most interesting game to me out of the state games that happened. Oceanside traveling up north to play Orono in the Class B boys state final. Very, very interesting game. Very, very interesting matchup. You look at Oceanside coming in undefeated in the regular season. I mean, they didn't score less than 70 points in the game until middle of January. They were just a dominant powerhouse. With the Galley brothers and Zeb Foster, they just had like the Sheffers girls team had a very, very good roster. And they go up, you know, up to the Augusta Civic Center. We knew it was going to be a tough arena for them. And they just were so flat, very, very flat, did not play well. Both the Galley brothers held to under 10 points. And it just really felt like they were a completely different team. And so, you know, I brought this topic up because I want to talk about not only with this situation, but in general. I think it's very interesting to see a team like this that even if they were to lose this game, which I think it's fair, Orono's a great team. You're going, as I said, you're going up north to Augusta. That's a place they don't play very often. It's,
they actually went to Bangor. They played the game in Bangor, so it's even Bangor. It's even more.
Even farther.
That's right, right next to Orono. Yeah.
Even
yeah.
more proves my point. But you know, we knew it was gonna be a tough game for them. But even if they lost, I wouldn't have expected them to lose like they lost. You know, their star players didn't play well, they had no offense going. And I think Orono's a great team, but I don't think Orono's defense was the killer in that game. I just think that they just didn't show up. And so I guess my question to you or what I want to talk about is like, how often, like, is this something that you have seen a lot throughout sports, whether it's professional or high school? Or do you think that this is one of those rare situations where Oceanside just decide not to show up?
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, we had Michael Hoffer on last week. He talked a little bit about it. And, you know, I would say the only place I little disagree with you is I think Orono's a fantastic team. I think Oceanside got a lot of publicity down here for a lot of reasons. but Orono, and I don't, not like I've seen Orono play. But talking to Michael Hoffer and even Cole a little bit, who we're going to talk to you later today, you know, they're a fantastic team and basically playing more or less a home game, right? So, in the old days, you had the Augusta Civic Center, they had the Bangor Auditorium, and the auditorium, Bangor Auditorium was this old, you know, big facility, but like it had a magic to it. And now they have the Cross Insurance Center up there, not the Cross Insurance Arena, the Cross Insurance Center doesn't have the same magic, but whether it's the traveling, I don't know. I watched some of the game. It was tough to tell, like, the percentage of fans up there. I think with Oceanside, you know, they had so much publicity early on. You know, Dana White talked about them for the owner of the UFC. I'm not saying, like, that was a factor in terms of they got a little big for their britches or anything like that. But these tournament games are tough. I mean, when you have so much pressure on you, when you're undefeated, when everybody's been talking about you all year, I'm sure there were people on Twitter or everywhere else asking, like we asked last week, could Oceanside compete in double A? Like they're not only just scoring a lot of points, but they're just destroying teams. And you saw it a little bit in their playoffs. Like they weren't beating teams by 50, 60, 70 points. There were some close games there. They obviously won them all. I think when you run into an Orono team, it's, you know, I'm sure in the coach's locker room, there's a lot of bulletin board material about no one thinks we're going to win. This isn't a coronation for Oceanside. And again, having to travel up to Bangor, I think would have a factor, not so much the actual travel, but, you know, being someplace that you haven't played before. We see it all the time down here in Portland area where teams will go to, you know, they're playing these small gyms where the walls are right behind the baskets. They go to the Cross Insurance Arena where it's this big cavernous space behind. And if you're a shooter, it's a totally different atmosphere there, not just the sound, but also the, you know, the visuals of shooting on a big hoop. You know, having not played at the Cross Insurance Center up there, maybe that played a factor. Orono, you know, maybe they have some guys who played there in the past. So, you know, again, I'll give a little bit more credit to Orono for playing well versus Oceanside. It is obviously interesting to see Oceanside only, you know, scored 48 points. That's, I don't know if that's a season low, but it's got to be pretty close. So it's hard when you have so much built up and you have big, you know, the Galley brothers, like I said, held under 10 points. It doesn't take away from their great season at all. Any team that wins a state championship has a great season. And I just think for them, it's tough because you don't know if you're going to get another chance to get back there. You know, as we talk about some of the other teams, which we'll talk about with Cole later, you look at a team like Wyndham, they won it this year. They're still young. Some other teams maybe are losing a lot more guys. So, look, hats off to Oceanside for a great season. It's just so many different factors can go into a game, and sometimes you just don't play that well, to be honest. And they just didn't play that well in the state championship, and Orono deserves all the plaudits for getting the job done and pulling the upset for the pundits. But maybe it wasn't an upset. Maybe those two teams played often. You'd see, you know, Orono getting a little bit more respect.
That's true. What's your first topic of the week?
Yeah, my first topic, again, we'll kind of wrap up the some of the state championships. I want to mention, you know, Gray New Gloucester. I watched that game. They had an unbelievable turnout for their boys game, and they take the gold ball. So hats off to Gray. I have some friends up in the Gray area. Looking at the double-A games, so in the girls game, not surprising that Chevres won. They were kind of a juggernaut. They win 38-24. Another amazing defensive performance. So the question becomes, you know, where do they stand all time? You know, I have a little bit more perspective on this. You know, they have the superstar player, Matty Fitzpatrick. They have a great coach in Billy Goodman. They have other pieces. So where does this rank? You know, and again, we'll talk later too. You know, Emma Lazat, one of the best players in the state, you know, transfers to Thornton Academy this year, first senior year, back to her hometown. and she wasn't on that team, and they still went undefeated. They weren't unbeatable. Like, there were some close games, obviously, but it's, for me, it's, my take is they should be considered an all-time team. You know, maybe there wasn't a whole lot of, you know, if you look at these, this group of girls' high school basketball teams this year compared to other years, there wasn't a lot of superstar-laden teams, but that doesn't take away from going undefeated. You beat everyone on your schedule. So for me, they're, you know, maybe not the best team I've ever seen in, I would say, 25 years of watching high school basketball, but they're definitely in the top five for me. Just impressive. And the way that they're shutting, they shut down all these teams. Again, we talked about last week, you know, basically not allowing 40 points for most of the games in the second half of the season. That's really impressive. And going to a state game, and that game was a little bit close early on too. They weren't scoring very well in the first half either, but in the second half, they just completely shut down Gorham. And Lon Berthume, you know, threw everything he had at it, but it just wasn't enough. So great on Chevers. I'll get your thoughts on that in a minute, but I also want to mention the, you know, the Wyndham boys. That game was an all-time classic. You know, Wyndham jumps out as the underdog. We'll call them the underdogs because even though they were a one seed, you know, they don't have much experience in these games. They jump out to a 22-8 lead after one. Gorham comes back in the second quarter, answers. And basically from that point on, the second half into overtime, super close game back and forth. It looked like for a while Gorham had the upper hand, but Wyndham just kept responding. Gabe Mishu, 28 points in the loss for Gorham. He did foul out in overtime, and I believe he did get hurt a little bit. He hurt his hamstring or his calf sometime. He had to get stretched out. A few Gorham players looked like they needed some stretching there at the end of the game. Ashton Leclerc had 21 points. He also fouled out a little bit earlier in the fourth quarter. So Gorham was a really shorthanded in that second, in that overtime. And for Wyndham, my gosh, like, not only is there only their first state championship, but they win it in large part to two sophomores who had some clutch free throws down the stretch. This team is not going away right now. They were not good last year. 5-13, I believe, is their record. And to turn around in 1 year, it's basically like the, you know, Houston Texans on steroids here to come back. So congrats to Wyndham on the first state title. But for these two games, my overall take, Chevers, top five teams that I've seen in girls basketball in my 25 years or so of covering it. And that state championship, which I thought was going to be kind of a Wyndham. I thought it was going to be a Gorham, not a blowout, but I thought they win comfortably. Ended up being an incredible game back and forth. Two teams with a lot of depth, not really many superstars, but hats off to Wyndham. They found a way every game. You know, their leading scorer sometimes coming off the bench. So an all-time state championship game for me. You know, I wasn't able to go to it in person, but boy, was it entertaining. And that's, we talked about last week how this tournament didn't have a whole lot of signature games. For me, that was a signature game of the whole tournament.
Yeah, I agree. I think the one thing I'd add, or at least my opinion on the Chevers team, is that I do think that they're an incredible team. Again, I haven't watched Maine high school basketball as long as you have. So there's probably a lot of teams that you've seen that I haven't. But in my eyes, they are one of the best teams I've ever seen. But I think it's, I try to look within that and say, like, you know, why are they so good? And in my eyes, it's because the players around Natty Fitzpatrick, I would put Ruth Bowles in a different category, but most players that she plays with, they know, like, we're playing around her. Like, that's how we're going to set this team up, is we're going to play through her, and we're going to have a specific role, and that's our role, and everybody plays that role so well. And that's why I think they're an incredible team. Ruth Bowles is a great shooter, and she's obviously another person that they run the offense through. But I think that Maddie Fitzpatrick as a player is probably one of the best players I've seen in Maine high school basketball throughout my 4 years. And even coming back this winter and watching a game, like, the way that she just, like, it feels like she understands the game way more than anybody else around her, and she uses that to her advantage. And it's no surprise that she's going to Division I to play for Amy Vachon up in UMaine, who's a great coach and has a great system up there. But, you know, she's just such a talented player. And I think, you know, as you mentioned, they had players leave and they were still this good. And I'm almost happy and excited that they won. I obviously would like to see competition and those kind of things, but I was glad to see in her senior year her get to win a gold ball. And then for Wyndham, again, a totally roller coaster game. I know you and I were in a text thread talking, you know, giving updates to the game and trying to, like, figure out what was going on because it was all up and down. But you mentioned those sophomores, and that's one person that nobody, I think, really looked at was Tyree James. Tyree James had a phenomenal playoff run. He's
legendary.
Yeah, he He's going to play in the Rising Stars game for Big Time Hoops. I'm pretty sure they play that game up in Bangor. But it's just an incredible run, and that's one of those guys that comes off the bench or doesn't play very many minutes, but played phenomenal throughout the playoffs. And it's someone that we're going to be watching now for the next couple of years because he's only a sophomore, and he's definitely going to be take control of that team. So I think they were great state games. I think Gorham, as you mentioned, got a little unlucky there with what might have been some injuries and players fouling out, and that really maybe hurt their game. But it was a great run of the tournament, and interesting tournament. But it's a little funny, I would say, that in the last episode we talked about how rare it is for two teams to win, but just a boys and girls program at one school to both be in the state game. And we talked about Gorham having that opportunity, and both of them lost. So it's a little unfortunate.
That's the thing. Yeah, we were 1-3 on those. Yeah, 1-3 on those teams. So tough game, tough weekend for Gorham. Tough day for Gorham. They lost two states, but at least Oceanside got one. But it's hard. Again, it's just because you make it there, it doesn't really mean anything. Sometimes they do some cross play where they might play someone from the north or south, but a lot of times you haven't seen these teams before, and it's a lot more difficult to figure out how to stop them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
I will mention too is just again congratulations to all of the teams. I know we only talked talked a little bit about A and we mostly double A and some B, but congratulations to all the teams that won their championships. Whether it was in Bangor, Augusta, or down here in Portland, it was a lot of great games, and we'll talk a little bit about the media coverage here in a few for my second point. But if you want to head on to your second rundown point.
Yeah, so sticking with basketball, but moving up to the collegiate level. So obviously, this, if anyone who's watching this probably has seen this, is Caitlin Clark passed Pete. Now,
Maravich.
It's Maravich. All right. I was saying Maravich earlier, but it's Maravich. All right. She passes Pete Maravich's all-time NCAA Maravich point total, and that's for men's and women's, and just an incredible feat for her. But and obviously has declared for the WNBA draft, and one of the things I was looking at was there's pretty much no doubt she's going first over on the WNBA draft. Who's likely to get her? And I looked at the WNBA, especially this season, the Indiana Fever are very likely to get the first overall pick. And looking at recent years, the Fever have been pretty much the worst team in the WNBA. They just don't really have any sort of roster set up. Unfortunately, the organization is not set up very well. They're not really built for success. And so it bears the question to me of, how is she going to do in, first off, you're in the Midwest, and that's a tough market to play in, especially in a league like the WNBA, which is trying to build and get bigger. But it makes me wonder, is Caitlin Clark going to be this player that helps bring this team to a WNBA championship? Is she going to continue her reign of media attention, or is she going to maybe fizzle out because unfortunately she's heading into a market and an area where basketball just isn't big? And you could always, make the point of that, she's at Iowa and look at how many people go into Iowa games, which is totally true.
Right.
But for how little the WNBA gets media attention, it makes me a little skeptical about how this might go with her, joining a team that just doesn't really have hasn't had any success in recent years. Their last above 500 win season was in 2016. So this team hasn't been in successful play in a while. So my question to you is just, what do you think we're going to see from Caitlin Clark 2, 3, 4 years to come in the WNBA?
Yeah, it's a hot topic right now. You're seeing a lot of interesting takes on there. You saw Jay Williams from ESPN get a lot of flack recently because he said, she can't be considered a great player until she wins because they haven't won anything, in terms of an NCAA championship. You're also seeing a lot of people talk about this record. And, I tend to... Look, there's a lot of things being like, obviously she's one of the best players ever. Obviously she's the best scorer in women's basketball history ever.
Of course.
Obviously she's playing a different type of game than anybody ever has. She's playing Steph Curry ball, basically. And she's revolutionizing the game and you can debate whether it's a pro or con. You know, for her, it's a pro, but I could absolutely say, anecdotally at least, that Steph Curry's and his other people like him have in some ways hurt the game of basketball, because you're seeing at the local, at the low levels, that people just want to throw up threes all the time from some super deep. That's a whole nother discussion. So it's interesting too, because so she's leaving NCAA and she's going to the WNBA. And I don't think there's much debate that the NCAA gets a lot more publicity than the WNBA. A lot of that's thanks to her right now.
Yeah.
But look, if you ask people before Caitlin Clark became popular, name me, you know, three or four NCAA women's basketball coaches. They could probably could. Gino Auriemma, Dawn Staley, a few others, right? Name me a WNBA basketball player, like, or coach, sorry, coach. Could you even name the franchises? So, and then there's the money part. Obviously, before the NIL stuff came up, you know, it would have been an obvious choice to go to the WNBA, but she's making a lot of money potentially with, you know, college. I know she's not, she's a little different than, she's not taking straight money from like their collective, but she's making money, you know, in other ways. So her going to the pros, you know, let's just assume they don't win the NCAA championship this year. You know, what is her legacy in college? Look, I don't think you could, I snicker a little bit at the fact that, you know, that they bring up Pete Maravich. It's like, we don't compare men's and women's records in basically any other sport. Like, we don't look at every other sport and say in tennis, well, you know, so-and-so has more, you know, no name the sport point in the NBA. Like, we don't compare the WNBA and the NBA stats. We, in any other sport there, there's women and men. We don't compare them really. It's just, it's easy for the media to kind of hype her up a little bit and say, well, she has more than Pistol Pete Maravich. Totally different game. They didn't have a 3-point shot with Pete Maravich. Totally different type of basketball. So for me, that's not, that's really a non-story. As far as the Indiana Fever go, I mean, Indiana loves basketball. There's no question about it. Everything you see, like, they haven't been great at the college level for the men's side. We do have, obviously, Mackenzie Holmes from Maine on the women's side, which is awesome. So maybe she could be the LeBron, that, as he was for the Cavaliers for the Fever. My big question that I don't have an answer to, it's kind of rhetorical, is, like you mentioned, 2 to 3 years down the road, you know, does she bring the WNBA more to the forefront, or is this a lot because it's college and college basketball naturally is more interesting than the pros? I think, you know, whether it's men's or women's, the tournament makes it interesting. She's going to these college campuses with student sections. I don't know what the crowds are going to be like for a lot of her WNBA games. So I don't know. She's had an amazing career, and whether or not she wins a championship this year, for me, doesn't, you know, if she doesn't win, it doesn't really stain her legacy. Cause you know, it's just, I don't know. How's her game going to translate to the pros? Well, she's still going to be shooting threes from that deep, so it's not much of a physical difference. I just will be interested to see if it really vaults the WNBA anywhere. I think it would definitely help the Indiana Fever in their home playoff games, but yeah, we'll see what happens.
Yep.
Definitely agree with that point. You know, obviously we'll still have to see what happens, but let's head into your second topic here for the rundown segment.
Yeah, kind of my last point here, probably about high school basketball for a while, was the review of the media coverage, specifically the broadcasts that we saw throughout the playoffs. We talked a lot about last week about the media, social media, some of the people who were doing that. But I want to just kind of get my thoughts on the different types of ways that people can watch basketball games online now and on TV. So really the ones I looked at were YouTube via Huddle Focus, NFHS, WHOU, and MBPN, main PBS. I'll kind of give you my ranking. So my least favorite, definitely, I'm going to put NFHS. And I'm putting that on there because it's another pay service. I didn't decide to pay for it. And that's not to say anything poor about anybody who did broadcasts on them. I know Cole did them, who we're going to talk to later. Not about the broadcasters at all. It's just, I don't always feel like the NFHS has the same general quality, video quality. And also it's fewer and fewer teams who are using it. So, and that was really, you know, some of the first rounds of the playoffs, but also maybe the semifinal regional round, not so much for double A, but for single A and B. You know, I just find it not to be, and I've used some of their products before. I just don't love it as much as the others. Number three would be the YouTube Huddle. I think, you know, most schools have it now. If they don't have NFHS, they have these Huddle sideline cameras. The only reason I put it above NFHS is because it's free. The quality of the YouTube Huddle ones, not great. There's usually no commentary. It's basically, you know, an AI thing that's following what they think is the ball, and doesn't always work that way. In the playoffs, not so much a big deal, but as I mentioned last week with Michael Hoffer, because you're basically setting a time that should come on and off, like a security camera almost, sometimes you'll miss some things. Mm-hmm. But for the playoffs, I watched the TA Sanford game via Huddle, and it's just, you just don't feel it. The audio is just really poor quality, and not only just because there's no announcers. Sometimes the scoreboards are either fuzzy or blocked by something else, so not a huge fan. But I understand the service is great for Huddle in the future, and to have everything on YouTube very accessible. Then next one I'll have is MBPN. Great quality broadcast. Actually, a former coworker of mine, he works now at NESCOM at Hustle University, Frank Welch. He was one of the executive producers. So basically what they did was, like, NESCOM and their crew, they're both the professors and the students, they basically did a lot of production. They have a production truck. They do a lot of broadcast help up, like, for UMaine Athletics, but also they came down. I thought the broadcast itself was flawless. Great replays, good camera angles. They had a microphone next to the hoop in the rim, which adds a whole lot. I've always wanted to do it on TATV. I just couldn't figure out how to physically do it without putting our equipment in danger. Adds a whole lot. The only negative I have is that it wasn't on TV. They decided, at least on main PBS down here, they showed the A games in the afternoon, and they showed the C games, I believe from Bangor or I guess I'm not sure which one, but either way, they show the C games. The double A games, you had to either go on a website or you could watch it on WHOU for free. So I thought that was cool, but I couldn't figure out, you know, my TV was on the fritz a little bit, so I couldn't. I was disappointed I couldn't watch those on TV. They were on replay, I think, after the fact. And then number one for me was WHOU. They do such a great job. I understand, you know, it's $10, as we talked about last year, and during football season, I don't really buy it that much, maybe for states if TA's in it, because for me, it's not as much, it's not as great a value, but for basketball, it's awesome. Being able to see all those games as well. My only wish is that HOU could get all games from all divisions, because then you could really just watch games all day instead of having to figure out where these games are. So again, I have nothing negative to say about any of the announcers, the sideline people, production people, but as far as access, ease of access, the value for your money, everything else, WHOU is at the top. So, your thoughts on, you know, somebody who's been away, so you weren't able to go to any of the games, and how easy was it for you to access these games?
Yeah, I mentioned this last week. I'm a college kid, so I did not pay for the WHOU service. So I didn't really watch any games. I love to follow along on X and like and interact with some of the tweets from people like Cole and people like Ethan Snow and Greg Levinsky. But I definitely, looking back and seeing clips and talking to people, I definitely think that WHOU has to be number one for this tournament. And a lot of that has to do with how big of a jump up it was from recent years. They really took the time to make sure that their broadcasts were of the best quality of possible. And I know that even at certain times, they were dealing with technical issues at the Expo Center. I know, or Expo, they're having, I don't know which day it was. I think it was maybe the quarterfinals or semifinals in the regions, which is tough. You can't do anything about it. You know, it happens. But they did a good job dealing with it, and they had some really, really great broadcasts, really good graphics. And it's just nice to see, you know, not that what they had in the past was bad, but more just like to see the improvement is nice.
Here's one criticism, and it really is not much to do with HOU, but the setup at the Cross Insurance Arena, and we saw some stuff on Twitter. Rob Kennedy does an amazing job as play-by-play. I noticed when I was at the Cross Insurance Arena for the TA game, we weren't doing a broadcast, but you could not hear the PA announcing at all. And unlike in the past, they did not show the fouls or anything, the personal fouls for each player up on the screen. And so I was watching the state game, the AA boys game, and it was hard. And like the announcers who were tableside, they didn't know, you know, didn't really understand like where the foul situation was when Mishu fouled out. They didn't really mention it. Or maybe it's either one of the two guys we mentioned for Gorham that fouled out. They didn't really know. They showed the video of the guy like on the bench, obviously fouled out. But they had no idea because they couldn't hear the PA system. So that's not really an HOU problem, but they need to figure out the communication, because that was the only thing that take away from the broadcast is, even though Rob, I forget who the color guy was doing a great job, they weren't able to really communicate effectively to the people about some things like fouls, because just the setup they have there at the CIA. They need to fix that. Maybe it's a spotter keeping track of files, but that was one negative. But again, not have to do with really HOU. It's just the setup that they had there.
Yeah, for sure.
And well, what's your final rundown piece today?
So I kept the best one for last because I know that you and I will definitely get into this one. So in recent years, I've been more of a Europe, you know, following European soccer, big Manchester United fan. But I think it was 2 days ago, maybe a couple days earlier than that. The UEFA, which is like the big, if you don't know, it's like UEFA is the organization that pretty much runs and controls and oversees pretty much all of European soccer. They officially announced changes to the United Champions League, the Europa League, and the Europa Conference League, which are all these tournaments within Europe. And it's basically like the best team in the world, or best club in the world, rather than like a World Cup. And this is pretty a big tournament that happens every single year. And they have officially changed the format. And the whole point of this is not, you know, obviously I'll go through it, but I absolutely despise the changes. So I'll read them off. So originally it was very similar to the World Cup. It's four teams in eight groups. You play round robin style. And you then go to, you know, top two teams in each group, make the knockout rounds, and then you play, I believe it's single elimination throughout the tournament.
Home and home. It's home and home until the final.
Until the final, yep. And then within the group, whoever comes in third gets moved down to the Europa League, and then same thing for Europa League to Conference League. It's kind of like stacked on top of each other. The change is now from 32 teams to 36 teams, and it's going to be very similar to how a lot of the leagues work, where it's a league system. Each team will get eight randomly selected opponents, two from each pot or like grouping of teams that you get picked from. And then positions 1 through 8 qualify directly to the round of 16. Positions 9 to 24 face off in the knockout round, and 25 to 36 are eliminated from all competitions. They will not drop down. You are just done. Nothing else for you. And then every single additional round is a home and away format with a single game final. That's similar. But the biggest thing about this, and they had a promo video for it. I've read articles about it. What they are preaching and what they're trying to say is that this new format, adding four teams, adding two, you know, when you're playing round robin, you play six games. Now you're going to play eight. Which these are midweek games. You know, most leagues play all their games on the weekends. You're adding games middle of the week. That's a lot. Players have for years advocated for less games through their seasons, and now you're adding more. But they are promising that this new format will level the playing field within, you know, these tournaments or whatever you want to call it. And even though the total amount of games are going from 125 to 189, the total amount of games played. And the biggest issue I have is that, you know, it's eight randomly selected, two from each pot. And usually for example, I'll use the Champions League, and we'll be talking most about the Champions League, but in the Champions League in each group, you usually get two teams that are top of Europe and two teams that are not so great, you know, middle of the pack. It's roughly pretty even, but you usually have two favorites. I don't think this levels the playing field at all. I think you're going to get a ton of teams that are going to get really good draws. They're going to play eight crappy teams, and there's going to be other teams that are going to play eight insanely good teams, and it's just unfortunate draw. And I think it actually it breaks the playing field so much more. I think that you're not going to see these lower teams make it to the knockout stages as much as you usually do. I don't think it helps the game. I think in general, they're adding games doesn't help any team. I don't think anyone's really excited about it. I really do like the group round robin, the knockout format that they have. But then you even go into it further. I know I'm kind of monologuing here, but so because there's four new teams, there's additional spots now. So in each you know league, like the Premier League, the top four make the Champions League, and Bundesliga, which is the German league, I think it's three, maybe four. But the additional spots, so how they're going to break it up is they're going to do two of the four spots are going to go to the top two leagues. In the top two, like finishing leagues in Champions League. So, for example, if Manchester City plays Real Madrid in the Champions League final. Those two spots would go to the Premier League and La Liga, which Real Madrid is in. And the other two spots are going to be based off of what is called a new sport coefficient based on historical results and performances, which from how it was described basically means that if a team like Manchester City, who has been in the Champions League for years, they're top of the Premier League pretty much every year, if they were to somehow just, you know, end up being like 12th in the Premier League, they'd still, there's a chance for them to be able to leapfrog teams and get that because of how they've played in recent years, which I also don't like, because I just don't think that's very fair to teams that may deserve it more. But I know I just gave a lot of information out there very quickly. I know, you know, we've talked about this a little bit before. I know you know about this, but just give me your thoughts on this. I'm very frustrated, but how are you feeling about the new format for the next year?
It's about money, 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 and money. That's what it's about. It's about money. They have something that's great and they're ruining it. Like whether it's FIFA with the World Cup, they're ruining the World Cup after this next one, or in this next one, because so many teams are making it. The Champions League is the best, you know, club competition in the world. It only includes, you know, teams in Europe, but it's the best. It's simple. You understand it. And now they're ruining it for money because, you know, all these big time owners, you know, tried to break away and make the Super League a few years ago where all the best teams would play in their own league every week. Now they're trying to basically create that with the Champions League. I think it's disgusting. You know, I think you're going to see a lot more, like you said, top teams. You could have the top six teams in the English Premier League make the Champions League. That's absurd. That's like less than a third of the league will make the Champions League. The only positive that comes out of this, the only thing I don't like about the current Champions League format is that the third place team goes into Europa League. I don't like that. As a team, Liverpool's in the Europa League this year. It's my team I cheer for because we had a bad season last year. I don't like that these Champions League teams gets to balloon to come down into another round of 32, I think it is. I don't like that. So I like the fact that if you're out of the Champions League, you're out of the Champions League. Other than that, it's about money. It's about power. It's about more midweek matches. What you're going to see is these domestic club competitions for the top teams. They're not going to care about it. They can't possibly compete as much if they're adding another couple games. It's just disappointing. I don't know how it's going to work out. I love, just as you explained it, and I know soccer, I could not, it's so hard to figure out eight randomly selected teams. I don't know how it's going to work. I hate it, even though Liverpool might benefit from it because they might get that coefficient, you know, if they have a bad year. It's just, it's brutal. They took something that was beautiful and they're destroying it for money, and it's going to be the death of UEFA and the death of FIFA eventually.
Yeah, I agree.
That's my take.
My two biggest issues, I know I already talked about how frustrated I was, but my two biggest issues is the coefficient, because I think it's going to become like the NCAA March Madness, where sometimes the teams that get bids make no sense to anybody and they have no explanation.
Right.
I think it's probably not going to be the Premier League. It's probably going to be La Liga or Bundesliga or maybe even Serie A in Italy, but there's going to be like teams are going to have bad years and just happen to make it in, which just doesn't make sense to me. And I really want to go back and hammer this home for people who may not understand soccer. Soccer, the way that it's played, the amount of effort and strategy that goes into it and physicality, it's just like the NFL. They play once a weekend. That's how almost every league works. I'm looking specifically at the Premier League. Imagine, I'm going to make an analogy here. Imagine if the NFL adding these games is like basically saying, okay, you're going to play on Wednesday and then you're going to play on Sunday. Like, that's ridiculous. That's just not how it works. It's already hard enough that they have to do this already. For, you know, in every year that the Champions League has happened, a lot of weeks, you know, in December, January, March, and April, they have midweek games and they struggle, and you have to have deep rosters. And they're just adding more games. And I just don't understand it. And I 100% agree with you. It's ruining
money. That's why.
It is ruining.
TV rights, gate rights, all about money.
Yeah, it is just, it's so unfortunate to see. I'm just going to try my best to enjoy this year's Champions League, which is the last time you'll have this format for probably ever. But you made a great point, and that's the one thing that I also wanted to hint on is that, you know, there's this whole thing for years of talking about a Super League. And for so long, all the teams said we're against it. They openly were saying we're against it. So they're like, okay, we'll change that a little bit. We'll just make the Super League the Champions League. And it's just like, I don't know. It's really frustrating for someone who really likes the format they have now and feels like they're changing like the institution of what this has been for years. And I don't know, it's just, it's so frustrating to me.
Absolutely.
All right.
All right, my final take, last thing about high school sports. So Thornton Academy played Falmouth in a 4-overtime game last week, last Friday night. It ended up being like a 3.5-hour, 4-hour game. Basically how they do it, they play 3 periods, they play an 8-minute overtime, and then if no one scores, they redo the ice and then play 2 more 8-minute overtimes and then redo the ice, blah, blah, blah. So Thornton Academy wins 4-3, really exciting game, but it took forever. So the question becomes, is that format the right way to do it? I mean, it's the longest game in the history of Thornton Academy boys hockey. Not very, and it's funny thing, it was 3-3 in regulation, then no one scored for basically like a full game more. I'm not saying, you know, that they should do an overtime and a shootout in a playoff game, but maybe do they try the NHL model where they go 4-4 or they go 3-on-3 or something like that. I don't really have a strong opinion of it. I mean, being there, it was great that they won. If they would have lost, I would have been like, I can't believe I just sat through 2 full intermissions, you know, plus like 3 extra periods of hockey. And look, the actual hockey itself, very exciting. It's overtime, obviously. But then like the overtime ends, and you're like, I got 17 minutes to sit here and twiddle my thumbs here. So my take would be, I think, you know, maybe they do 1 full overtime and then after that they go 4-4. It just would promote. And look, this is rare that it happens, but I think it'd be more exciting anyway. But I'm curious your take.
So I don't think it'd be a bad idea to go to 4-on-4. I definitely no shootout, absolutely no shootout. Don't add that into high school sports hockey, please. No, God, no, can't have it. But I'm at my I think what I'm going to stand on here with my point here is that I don't think they need to change it, because I saw something very similar happen in 2020 during I believe it was the bubble. I think it was the bubble year for hockey. You saw the Tampa Bay Lightning, Columbus Blue Jackets, 5 overtime playoff game. Now, that's obviously on a higher level. You're talking 20-minute overtime periods of 5-on-5. But after that game, people were like, what just happened? We have to change things because 5 overtimes of 20 minutes, it's absolutely ridiculous. The game, I think, ended up being like close to 5 hours or 4 hours with the breaks and everything. And but it hasn't happened since then. In the playoffs, we haven't seen, I think, farther than double OT, our late double OT game in the last couple of years. And I think it's just one of those things where it happened one time, and yes, it was probably – I wasn't there, and it was probably horrible to sit through for 4 overtimes. And I bet you the players were exhausted afterwards. But I don't think it's something that happens all the time, and I don't think it's going to continue to happen in future years. So I don't think it's an issue that's going to have to be dealt with. But then on the same sense, I could say, you know, for hockey's fun.
It definitely was a special thing, but it's just, yeah, I can totally see your point. I agree with no shootout, but yeah.
Yeah, we are going to head into our guest interview this week. We have a very special guest, someone that Jeff and I are very connected with, but we'll get into that end of the interview. So let's introduce Cole Purvis. Hey, we want to welcome in our guest for episode number 2 of the Made Rundown Pod. It's Cole Purvis. Jeff and I know Cole very well, worked a lot with him when I was in high school last couple of years doing Trojan Talk, TATV, you name it. Many of you may remember and remember some of those episodes, some of those broadcasts, but we're excited to talk to Cole today, wrap up the high school tournament talk and go in a little bit about what's next for Cole. So Cole, to start off, the first question, the thing we really want to talk to you about is, you know, just kind of recap this week. You know, you covered a lot of games last week, and obviously, you know, we just had the state games. But just tell me about, you know, what it was like. I know you covered a lot more, did some producing, did some sideline reporting. What was it like, and did you have a lot of fun?
Well, first of all, it's great to be here, and I'm glad that you guys are doing this podcast, even though you're down in Connecticut, still following the main sports scene. Yeah. But yeah, the tournament was awesome. I mean, I have been looking forward to that week for a long time. I purposely scheduled nothing else for February vacation so that I could go to a ton of games. And I believe I attended 26 games, and I worked 22 of them. So it was really a lot of long days and long nights at the expo and the Cross Insurance Arena, but it was really fun. And I mean, the amount of people that I met and talked to is just hard to wrap my mind around. It was such a great experience for me to be able to really get into the main sports scene during that week. And like you said, Zach, I was able to do a variety of roles, not just the play-by-play announcing, but also some color commentary, working the camera, and then doing some producing, which was new for me, as well as sideline reporting, which I'll admit isn't exactly my favorite because it's, you know, it's kind of like 30 seconds that you really have to be on your game as opposed to play-by-play announcing where there's a little bit more margin for error. But it was definitely a skill that I needed to learn, and I think I improved on that a lot this week. And it's always fun talking to players and coaches after they've just won a big game. So yeah, the tournament is such a fun time, and it was awesome to be a part of that this year.
Now, you did a lot of different levels of games covered from AA all the way down to B. What did you notice the big – was there a huge skill gap that you noticed between the B teams, the A teams, and the AA teams on boys or girls side as you covered those games?
I don't think there's a huge talent gap. I mean, you think about the Galley brothers. I think they would do just fine in Class AA. Certainly, I mean, the top teams in B and A would be able to compete in AA. Some of the lower end teams that didn't make the tournament, of course, you saw the blowouts that Oceanside had this year. Some of, like, you know, the bottom four or five teams in Class B would be complete toast in AA. But I think that in terms of the top, I don't think there's a huge difference, really.
Now, you, all the games that you did were for WHOU, correct?
Some were NFHS. I did, okay, so, I think, six for them. Yeah.
So as a young broadcaster, you know, what is it like, you know, during the season? I know you did a couple, but what is it like on that tournament to see the different types of companies? Those are two totally different companies. Some games that you did, you were basically solo almost. Some games you had a producer plus camera plus color. What are the different, you know, how was that experience for you going to different games and really not even really knowing what the situation was going to be and just have to adapt?
Well, in terms of the staff for the NFHS and WHOU games, it was pretty much the same. So I wouldn't say it was a huge adjustment. But I mean, WHOU's product has just improved so much over the course of this year and over the course of the past couple seasons. And I think, you know, the replay definitely adds an interesting element to the broadcast. And I think we have great producers, great play-by-play announcers, great color commentators everywhere you look. They're able to get guys like Abby Davids, who have coached, it seems like, every star player in the state of Maine, as well as, you know, Taylor Mannix, who does a great job on the radio, and Jeff Mannix, another play-by-play announcer. And then Greg Levinsky does a great job. He does it all, whether it's play-by-play, color, or sideline. And then Ethan Snow, I have to give a huge thank you to him because he's given me so many opportunities this winter, not just with the tournament, but also the main event, being able to do camera for that and sit courtside at that game. So I think that WHOU definitely has a deep talent pool at a variety of roles, which makes them so good.
Now, before I let Zach get in here, let's talk about that the main event. You had to do camera for the Cooper Flag. Did you do just one game, correct? Just the Civic Center games? What was that like? We talk about the levels, right? We talked about the difference between B and AA here. When you see not just Cooper Flag, but the other guys from Monteverde, and I forget the team they played at the Civic Center. What is that like? You were courtside. You get to be right up against these guys. Probably a little afraid for your life, considering they're coming at you, you know, at the baseline. What was that occasion like for you?
Yeah, in the first play of the game, right off the tip, Cooper Flag came right to my end and two-handed dunk right off the jump and actually stepped on my toe as well. So I was right there.
Oh, you get to
right
sue up, him. Keep that. Yep.
Right up against the action. So it was unbelievable, though. Like, just to, you know, be courtside, be right there after having watched, no disrespect to anybody that plays high school basketball in Maine, but being used to the pace of that game and then seeing a bunch of guys that are going top level Division I, it was an unbelievable experience. And one thing that I think would really improve the quality of the game here in the state of Maine, and I know it's not really an original opinion, everybody said it, we need a shot clock so bad. And I know it would be a sacrifice of other resources. Obviously, it's not a cheap investment, but figure it out. Like, we need it so badly in college or the NBA or any other state where there's a shot clock. If you're down by, you know, 8 points with 2 minutes left, if you make your stops and you convert offensively, you're going to come back and win the game. But in Maine, you don't even have the opportunity to do that. And I see some teams that are clearly better than their opponents. And I think, like, just run your offense and you're the better team and you'll be able to score even if you don't stall for 45 seconds to a minute. Like, it's just a poor quality of basketball. And, you know, I heard Greg Levinsky mention this on radio the other day that I'm losing my train of thought here, but, like, it's not a natural flow of basketball, you know, like, right. A lot of times when teams stall, they end up turning it over or missing a shot anyway, and they would be able to convert and make a basket if they ran their offense like normal and didn't stall.
No, that's the thing, too. There are a few games that stick out that you're like, okay, they're obviously time-wasting to try to kill the clock. But more often than not, it's more just about the flow, like you mentioned. It just isn't interesting to watch where they throw it around for a minute and a half and maybe take a shot and keep it. I just think, first of all, it gets you ready for the college level, but also just it changes the way offenses are go. You have to get up and go. And I think it's a better product for everybody else too. So yeah, I think everyone, except for the powers that be, for whatever reason, are definitely interested in the shot clock in Maine high school basketball.
Yeah. So before we wrap up talking about the tournament with you, I want to just go back. You know, you've covered it for a couple years now, and obviously this year more than in the past. But what are you going to miss most, obviously, because you're heading off to college and the basketball season's over? What are you going to miss most about covering basketball, either at the tournament, at the, you know, the Crosh and Cerns Arena, or the Expo? I totally blanked there for a second. Or even, like, for TA, what are you going to miss most about covering the sport in the state?
Just the excitement around it. I mean, Maine is a state that doesn't have any professional sports teams, so high school sports are really, you know, the best that we have, and the excitement that it brings all year long, people talking about the tournament, and also just the fact that I've grown to know so much about Maine high school basketball in the past couple of years, and now I have all this useless information in my head that's now going to go to waste because I can't be calling any games anymore. But yeah, I think that, you know, the different personalities, especially in the media that cover Maine high school basketball, I think on Twitter you see that a lot. You know, there are some, you know, healthy arguments at times about things surrounding like the shot clock and Mr. Maine basketball and the whole Oceanside situation earlier this season. Think about like how hilarious it is on Twitter sometimes to interact with these people. Like, for example, the ref fan, how this, I mean, that definitely, you know, stuck out to me during the tournament. And one other thing that I want to see is more high school kids like you and me, Zach, or high school, early college age kids getting on Twitter, because some of the things that adults will say to each other on Twitter are hilarious. I couldn't imagine how good it would be if more high school kids were on that space. Cause you know, you think about like Instagram, everybody's trying to be perfect, trying to post the perfect picture, write the perfect caption, perfect comment, all that stuff. Twitter is a little bit more unhinged. And I think if more young kids were on there giving their opinions about things like sports, it would be really awesome. So I think I would like to see that more. But I mean, so much about this tournament I just love, and I'm going to miss it so much. Obviously, I'm going to move on to Syracuse and watch a little bit better quality of sports, but still, something about the Maine basketball scene is just so pure.
Yeah, I definitely agree. And I think you made a great point there. It's something that I saw when I came here. You know, a lot of the people in the sports network organizations here, they use Twitter, or X now they call it, but they use it basically specifically just for reporting news, just very basic. And I've had people say to me, like, I really like that you like put your opinion out there, Zach. Yeah. And I like that you post that. And I'm like, you guys can do it too. It's not like you can just do, you know, Twitter for reporting. But yeah, no, I definitely agree. I mean, you mentioned right there, you know, you're going to Syracuse next year, and that really kind of works into the next question. You know, obviously, an incredible school and incredible program. I know, you know, knowing you for a while, I know it's somewhere that you really wanted to go. So what about this school really drew you to it? Whether, you know, whether that has to do with the program or with the area or whatever it is, just tell me a little bit about why Syracuse is a school for you.
Well, first of all, I wanted a big school. I wanted that kind of that environment around me. And obviously, you know, there's no question that they are one of the top journalism and broadcasting schools in the country. The alumni base that they've had, you see the success of some of the guys that have come out there. Like, you turn on your TV and watch a sporting event, it's very likely that you're going to see a Syracuse grad on there. You know, I think just the amount of opportunities that they have with their student radio station and the Daily Orange, which is their student newspaper, and their television station, Citrus TV, that just so many opportunities. And obviously, going through the college process, you know, you could pick a bigger school like that, or you could pick a school with less kids where you're going to get opportunities early on. But I think about something that Cal Cristoforo said to me back in the fall, which is that you want quality over quantity. And I think, you know, at a smaller school, you might get a lot more broadcasts, a lot more reps in. But at Syracuse, I think when you are ready to go and you actually do get reps, it's going to be quality ones and a very high level broadcast. And I mean, whether you go to a big school like Syracuse or somewhere like Husson, which is a smaller school up in Bangor that obviously has a great broadcasting program, I think there's a path to success no matter where you go. And obviously, you go to Quinnipiac, which is quite the broadcasting program as well. So I mean, in terms of the broadcasting aspect of it, like I said, you can be successful wherever you go, but I just think Syracuse is, you know, the place for me, the big school. I'm definitely excited to get going there.
Question for both of you, actually, on kind of on that note, looking at sports media going forward, you know, when I was in college 20 years ago, roughly, you know, they were kind of pushing people away from newspapers because, you know, newspapers were dying a little bit for sports wise. We talked to Michael Hoffer last week. He's one of the lucky ones that, you know, his paper's doing great. So now even you're seeing traditional. So for me, it was like, all right, well, you're going to go be a news anchor. You're going to be or a sports anchor. You're going to be Davey, Travis Lee. Those are now disappearing at alarming rates as well. So, and I know that both of you started at a very young age. Zach as a freshman, at least coming to me and asking to help out, and Cole as an eighth grader, certainly. And we're not going to show any clips, you know, having video podcasts even younger than that, but starting kind of the eighth grade, being like, okay, well, I want to do these. And you started with interviews, obviously. What are you thinking, like, for Zach, maybe because you're already in college and maybe you're talking to professors about this, but for Cole and both you guys, what do you see as a real, I'm not trying to dampen your dreams here, but what do you see as a realistic first job, you know, 3 to 4 years from now? And then what do you want to eventually be?
I guess I'll take it first. I what you're saying, unfortunately, is the truth. You know, professors are, you know, like they pop that bubble for a lot of kids. And I think the good thing is that going in, I knew that my bubble was already popped, that, you know, you can't just expect to be the next ESPN broadcaster. That doesn't come along very often. And, you know, the one thing that has been hammered to me is that you've got to find other things and have experience in other things within sports media. And you can go into a job interview and say, oh, I can do broadcasting, but I can also do social media production, and I can do writing. And, you know, I'm really, really good behind a camera, like other things within, you know, your wheelhouse. And so for me, that was, as I mentioned, social media stuff. I really, really enjoy making content social media wise. I got some great opportunities in the fall to go cover some Division I women's soccer tournament games doing social media. So I, you know, even though broadcasting is still where I want to go at heart, I'm starting to realize that, you know, I may find myself working in sports social media, you know, in my life, and kind of straying away from broadcasting. So it's not that the dream is gone. Obviously, with the student organizations here, I'm allowed to, and I have the opportunity to call a lot of games. But it's just about opening those avenues and finding new things. And I really found something that I truly do enjoy, and is definitely viable in the sports media market right now.
Yeah, I think it's sad to see like Sports Illustrated kind of closing down what they've been doing for so long. And I saw Peter King, who is a longtime NFL writer for NBC Sports, who just retired, you know, voices concerns about the industry and how media is kind of getting attacked and diminishing a little bit. And I think as long as you're aware of that and knowing, like Zach said, that, you know, it's not just going to magically appear a job at ESPN or like a top play-by-play announcer role, you have to be well-rounded. You have to have a ton of connections. You know, networking is just such a huge thing in this industry. And I think, you know, for me, obviously, I'm not in college yet, so I don't really have that type of experience. But, you know, just learning and taking in, you know, the opinions of people who have made it in this industry and what it takes to succeed, for sure. But you have to be able to fill a variety of roles, which is important to practice.
No, it's definitely a thing. And I think when you guys were both here, you know, trying to say like, it's great that you want to do play by play, but also learn how to set up the equipment, learn how to do the camera, mm-hmm. because those will be your first jobs. And for me, I wanted to be on ESPN. My first job was doing promotional work, which means basically doing contests for a TV station. And eventually I was able to morph that into, you know, doing a high school sports show and then obviously coming here. But yeah, having those different opportunities or, you know, that first job is you're not going to jump right to even ESPN. I mean, ESPN 20 years ago, there were a lot of anchors. Now they're down to only a handful because SportsCenter's not as big a thing as it was before. So it can be a scary time, but there's always going to be, you know, I think podcasting, something like this, I mean, this is the next big thing. I mean, it's here now, but in terms of it doesn't take that much money to start one. Anybody can do it. You can post on YouTube for free. You can post anywhere for free, basically. So I think this is kind of an avenue just about being entertaining, right? If you're going to do something like this, you're going to be talking for a living, or at least, you know, trying to convince people you can do it. You have to make sure you have to be able to communicate well. You have to be able to talk in front of people. And that kind of goes back to, you know, one of the things that I learned how to do doing newspaper work, especially, was asking questions. You know, I could take anybody off the street that I've never met before, and within 5 or 8 questions, I can make an interesting story about it. And having that confidence to ask anybody anything. As you mentioned, Cole, like you had to have the doing sideline, you get to ask the winning team, like how awesome is that? But there will be times maybe that you have to ask the losing team, especially maybe Zach could talk to that too, because if you're covering, I covered a beat for BU women's soccer when I was in college, and there were games and I had to get a quote from the coach every single game, whether they win or lose. And you had to go up to them after a devastating loss. And how do you ask that question? Especially if they make a big mistake, hey, you made a really bad timeout error at the end. What, you know, what happened. So those are life skills. Like I like to say, if you took my class, we were about life skills, not just about the technical skills. So the next question I want to ask too, before we get too far deep, is actually get Cole's reaction on the state games that we saw. You know, we talked about it earlier in the show today about double A specifically, Chevres. Where do you put, my two questions for you are, where do you put Chevres girls? I won't say all time because, you know, you've only been around a few years, but where do you put them in the last years you've been paying attention? And how surprised are you that Wyndham, kind of coming out of nowhere this year, they were under 500 last year, won the double A boys title?
I'll start with Wyndham. That's a team that kind of came out of nowhere. They were pegged as a team on the rise, trending upwards, a team that went 5-13 in the regular season last year and missed out on playing in the Cross Insurance Arena. But coming in this year, you know, I think they're a team that's just very tight-knit. I know that they, you know, worked in the offseason more than perhaps any other team, and they're still young. They've got several guys coming back, so they'll be good as well next year. I was pretty shocked that they beat Gorham. I was telling you, you know, off the air earlier this week that I think we've got a pretty predictable championship round in all different classes. And I think for the most part, my predictions came true. But I was surprised to see Wyndham take it to Gorham, a team that has looked so good this season. And when Gorham started to make that comeback in the second quarter, I think they won the second quarter by 15 points and went at the end of the half only down one. I thought it was a wrap and that Gorham was going to come back and win that game. But for Wyndham, a team that, you know, just very good defensively, and they've got a lot of underrated players. They don't really have a star. In fact, their leading scorer, Tyree James, comes off the bench, which you almost never see in Maine high school basketball. So it's a rare team. You know, they have a lot of underrated players. They don't really have a star, like a Gatorade Player of the Year, finalist type guy, but they're well coached. They're very deep. They have 6 to 7 players that can really score and contribute, and it can be a different guy on a different night. And it was kind of interesting to see some of the new bloods of Maine high school basketball make it to the championship this year, because normally it's the Portlands, the South Portlands, even TA, who's usually in the regional final, but Gorham trying to win their first since 2005, and then Wyndham in the state game for the first time ever. I thought you saw that with the atmosphere. Both communities really showed out in that game. And then for Chevres, I mean, I got to see them a lot this season. Honestly, I think I might have watched them more than I watched the TA girls this season, just with the WHOU broadcast, because I know they have a partnership with Chevres and do a lot of their games. That team is just so good. Maddie Fitzpatrick is just different. The way that she moves on the court is different. Her crossover has gotten so many defenders this year off balance, and Ruth Bowles would be probably the best player on 95% of the teams in the state of Maine if she wasn't playing with Maddie Fitzpatrick. And they have Megan Dearborn, who's a sniper from the corner who can hit timely threes, and she had all year long. Just a dream team for them, a dream season. They were a team of destiny from the beginning. Could you imagine, though, if Emma Lazotte stayed on that team? And they have a big three of Maddie Fitzpatrick, Ruth Bowles, and Emma. That would be just unfair. Like, you don't even have to play the season. Just hand them the trophy. And then they lost two other, I think, starters from last year as well who went to Mount Ararat. So I don't even think that any team would have came within single digits of them if they had kept some of those pieces. They lost the pieces, rebuilt around them. And even though Fitzpatrick and Bowles are graduating, they've got a lot of underclassmen who played some big roles this year. So I'm sure they're going to keep it going. That team was a wagon all year long. So you had kind of an underrated story in Wyndham and then Chevres, who just rolled through everybody.
What about the defense? Again, we talked about it last week's episode. And again, they let up 24 points in the state championship. You saw them more than most. What was it about their defense? Was it individual greatness? Was it team, you know, quality? Like, what made them so that they basically never gave up 40 points in the last half of the season?
I think they have the ability to switch 1 through 5. You talk about a player like Maddie Fitzpatrick, who is listed as a guard, but obviously she has size, so she can guard the post. She's quick enough to guard on the perimeter, and the same can really be said for Ruth Bowles. Just quickness all throughout their lineup. They've got active hands. They forced a lot of steals, and the press. The press was deadly this season. I know I watched that early December matchup when they played TA, and TA was just flustered all night long by that defense. And their depth as well, their ability to get fresh legs on the court. It's almost routine for Chevres. You know, 4 minutes into the game, they'll do almost a hockey line change and bring in 4 new players, with the exception of Maddie Fitzpatrick, who stays out there for most of the game. Literally, they would sub out 4 of their 5 starters, get some fresh legs into the game, and then continuing to cycle through that. So they really had a luxury that TA didn't this year, which was a ton of depth. They had a big team, and all their girls could really play. So, you know, keep getting fresh legs on the court, of course, having star defensive players like Fitzpatrick and Bowles in there. Nobody was scoring on Chevres all season long. And a Gorham offense that was good all year was really shut down by them. And so was Oxford Hills in the regional final.
I'm going to ask one more question about high school sports before we probably wrap up with some more pro sports. And Zach can answer this one too, if you want. So talk about fan sections and, you know, Thornton Academy, we talked about earlier in this episode, Thornton Academy wins in four overtimes at Falmouth. It's a great atmosphere there, packed. Both fan sections were huge. So I mentioned you, Cole. I went through one of the, you know, between one of the overtime when they changed the ice over, and it looked like a war zone. Like, students like flailing on the ground, trash everywhere. Not saying that negative way, but it was just exasperating. Mm-hmm. Post-COVID, there was a lot of negativity about student sections around Maine for good reason. I thought personally the students were out of control, not just here. I mean, there was a game here against Edward Little that was really bad. A game here against Von Eagle is really bad. You saw it on the road too. It wasn't just obviously Thornton Academy fans, but kids all around were just kind of acting out, like crossing that line. I feel like in the last year or so, that line is, they're finally kind of retreating across that line, maybe not on social media all the time, but certainly at the games. What is it about, you know, when you hear people say like, oh, the students are out of control, whether it's at college or in high school, and then you go to an experience like we had the other night, or you had the other night, I should say, us watching you, we were tired, but being like that, and obviously we win, celebration, like with your friends, like what is it like being part of a student section, and why should people, I don't say give you all another chance, but like understand like where you're coming from nowadays and being part of a student section like that?
It was unbelievable. And you have to think about the fact that like, this is our senior year for a lot of us in the fan section, and our basketball teams didn't necessarily have the greatest season. So we didn't really see a ton of winning in this winter sports season. And we thought, you know, we're only going to get one team playing at the Civic Center this year if hockey doesn't win. And for them to go down like 2-0 early was really tough. And then they score two goals in 24 seconds. And I mean, obviously the first goal, everyone goes crazy. Everyone's screaming, banging on the glass. And then we had barely recovered at all. And they score the next one. And everyone just lost their mind. I like felt like I was going to faint because I was yelling so much. Literally, like I was about to black out. And I'm like, I need to sit down here. But I think, you know, the key to a good fan section is not necessarily just yelling mean stuff all the time. It's being clever. Like if you can be funny and mean, that's better than just mean. And I think that's the key to it, I guess. But yeah, obviously, you know, fan sections are something that I'll remember from my high school experience for the rest of my life. And you know, obviously there needs to be some restrictions. I definitely think that the athletic directors and people like Mr. Tabor who have to watch over us have their work cut out for them, especially after COVID, like you mentioned, with how rowdy it can get. But I mean, as long as you're keeping it in check a little bit, you can kind of be as crazy as you want.
Only two kids got kicked out. That's not too bad. That's right. We won't go into that, but
just to wrap up that thought, you know, the difference I see in college and the thing that I definitely think is that the smaller the venue, the smaller the school, the more personalized the yelling, the chanting, yeah, the saying things is. As you get up, like even at Quinnipiac, I'm in a 9,000 kid school. When you go to watch a hockey game in a 4,000 seat arena, you can obviously, you know, chant or have some stuff, but it's not like yelling like in the TA gym when there's 50 or 60 kids standing right on the, you know, the baseline of where the players are. So I definitely think that I agree. The last couple of years after post-COVID, there was some issues, but you don't see that a lot in college. I mean, it's just kids don't really care that much to go after people. And it's more just like chanting, you know, or you can't do that after there's a penalty, or like even at one of the basketball games for Quinnipiac, they do the newspapers when they're reading the starting lineups for the other team. So you see some of that stuff, but it's not like high school. I remember being in some of the fan sections in high school and thinking, what am I doing here? Like, this is
I agree. Like the big arenas, like when you go to the Cross Insurance Arena, I think about the basketball game TA played against Scarborough. We were kind of shoved up in a corner and it was probably the worst spot to watch a game in the whole arena. It's definitely not as good of a fan section experience, and of course we got crushed, so that kind of adds to it too. But you know, when you think about a night like Falmouth, when it's a little bit more of an intimate atmosphere, not in a big arena, everybody's all up against the glass, things can get really wild when it's that type of environment.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. For sure. So let's move on a little bit to Zach, go for it. Yeah.
No, you're good. Just to finish up with some pro sports talk. Are you going to start the conversation on the Warriors and the Celtics, or would you have any other thoughts?
No, I was going to say, look, yes, we like to crap on the Warriors right now because they're on the downtrod, but and the Celtics are pretty much the 98 Bulls right now. They are as good a team as I've seen in a long time. But let's just get your little thoughts on the Warriors. And are they just trying to cling on a little too much? Do they really need Draymond Green on the roster still? Like, what's the deal? The performance they put on the other night was combined amazing by the Celtics and embarrassing by the Warriors. You just don't see a 50 point lead at halftime.
Yeah.
What's the deal? Like, what if you're the Warriors GM? Let's talk 2 to 3 years from now. What does the team look like?
Tanking for Cooper Flagg next year. Of course.
There we go. Oh, man.
I had to say, we were on like a 3-game win streak before that Celtics game. So we're still above 500. I think we're like 3 games above 500 right now. And obviously, I'm sure you guys saw this, but if the season ended today, the play-in would feature the Warriors, Mavericks, Lakers, and the Suns. So
yeah,
how about that for some star power in the playoff round?
Where it's all part of the NBA script. It's the NBA script.
And then you've got teams like the Thunder and the Timberwolves, smaller market teams with not as big a names, not the KDs, Stephs, LeBrons at the top. I'm going to be completely honest with you guys. I bailed on the NBA. I don't even think I've watched. I think I've watched one Warriors game this season. Wow. I've maybe watched 3 NBA games. And one of those I went to was a Celtics game back in December. College basketball is where it's at. It's a way better atmosphere. It's way better to get up for a big time regular season college basketball game than like, say, game number 47 of the NBA regular season. I don't care if it's LeBron versus Steph Curry. There's likely going to be a star that's sitting out anyway. Mm-hmm. And like, who cares if you win a regular season game? I mean, you can get into the playoff anyway. It's so easy to now with 10 teams. I haven't been watching a ton of the NBA this season. College basketball is just so much better and has just eclipsed the NBA on my list of favorite sports leagues.
No, I think it's a larger issue for the NBA too, because I mean, I haven't followed very closely for several years, even though Celtics are great. And that it's the time management by the players, the fact that they're making so much money. I think the problem with the NBA player right now in general, and you saw it in the All-Star game, is it's all about self-preservation. You know, they are making so much money. And they're so interested in their brand. They don't want to get hurt. They want to make sure that they're protecting their brand. They're protecting their future Supermax contract. They're protecting their opportunity, their chances to team up with other NBA stars. You have to have a little bit of rivalry and passion right now to make the regular season interesting. I mean, if you made the regular season 50 games, that'd be more interesting. They'll never do that, obviously. The playoffs, you know, they definitely ramp it up in the playoffs a little bit, but it's very rarely do you see a Cinderella team make it very far. So you kind of know it's going to be the Celtics in the Eastern Conference Finals. They probably should be in the NBA Finals. You know, the Nuggets are probably going to make the Western Conference Finals. So I understand why some people love it diehard. It's super expensive to go to the games now. So for me, it's definitely way down on my list now of ones I'm paying attention to for those reasons. But there are existential questions. I have friends of mine from college who are big NBA fans, bigger NBA fans, mostly Knicks fans, but they see the same things. It's like, how do you keep it interesting? How do you not, you know, with this guys like Jalen Brunson, who you would call an old school player who you can tell he gives 110% every night. We saw it with like Isaiah Thomas on the Celtics several years ago. Those guys are kind of few and far between now because there's so much money to be made. Don't need to hurt each other. You don't need to really, I guess you're Draymond. You know, that's going to be the big problem for the NBA going forward. I don't know what the solution is. I know Adam Silver wants to be a player's commissioner, and he is, but he also needs to worry about the bottom line. I could see the next media rights deal. I can't imagine it's going to be higher than the last one just because they paid so many billions of dollars for it, and the ratings are fine, but they're not growing close to near the NFL. So tough call right now. It's great that the Celtics are relevant. If they weren't, I can't even imagine how bad the ratings would be for the Celtics right now.
And one more thing I have to say about the NBA is that I believe it peaked between like 2015 and 2020, all the way up till the bubble. I think 2016 was peak NBA. I was watching some TikToks yesterday of like, you know, the old ESPN theme song that they now went away from. And now Mark Jackson and Jeff Van Gundy are no longer with them. Like, I think the whole media coverage, it doesn't feel the same. Like, the NBA was it in 2016. And for me, it just feels so much less significant this year for some reason. And it has for the last couple of years.
Definitely.
I definitely agree. I also think in general, it's just good to point out, it's a really lopsided year. I mean, OKC is the number 2 team in the Western Conference. I saw a stat today that the gap between the 1 seed and the 8 seed is smaller than the gap between the 1 seed and the 2 seed in the Eastern Conference. Like, the Suns are closer to the Timberwolves than the Cavs are to the Celtics. Like, it's just, it's an interesting year for basketball. But hey, this is good. You want to know why? Because you, Cole, you saying you're not really focused on the NBA means that maybe you're starting to watch watch a little more hockey? Yes. Is that what's happening? A little more Bruins this year for you?
A little bit. I've watched them off and on for sure. All right. And I've watched a little bit of college hockey as well. You know,
it'll be you, baby.
Yeah.
Oh, Cole Quinnipiac. I can't even get into this. We can't.
Oh, I forgot you guys are D1. That's right. I forgot.
Oh, yeah. Hey, I forget. There's a banner in our arena. What's that banner for? I feel like something happened recently. I'm not.
Yeah, Mr. C, didn't BU get swept this year by BC?
Yeah, they did, but we're going to be back. BC is a favorite to win the championship, but we'll see him in the hockey's final, and we'll see what's up. We'll see.
All right.
I get this guy named Cade Weber. He's a pretty good guy for BU, and they also have, like, you know, the number one overall pick soon to be. So I think I get their goaltending is a little suspect for BU, but the rest of the team's good. We'll see what happens in the tournament. I'm ready for the tournament now. They're just wrapping up a regular season. Mm-hmm. Beanpot's over. Let's get to the tournament. Frozen Four or
should
bust.
Be interesting. For the Quinnipiac and the ECAC is basically a lock. I mean, the competition is not like hockey East, so I'm ready for the real tournament.
Yeah. Cole, I have one more question for you just as we wrap up here. Just in general, just talk about your experience though over the last 4 years and really 5 years doing, you know, being a student broadcaster, doing a little bit of everything. You and Zach and Cal, the guys that we've had here, you've made a sacrifice. Like, maybe you haven't played as many sports as you would have. Maybe you weren't involved, you know, weren't being able to sit in the fan sections for football as much or anything else. But what is your kind of overall feeling as you head into your next chapter? And what has it been like for 5 years here doing this broadcasting stuff?
It's been awesome. Of course, I have to give a huge thank you to the great Jeff Christianberry for all. No, I'm kidding. But
okay. We're clip that. We're clipping that.
But yeah, it's been awesome. And I think that, like, the community support is a big thing because everybody kind of knows what we do. They know TATV now. It's like a big mm-hmm. presence within the TA sports world. And of course it helps that our teams generally win most of the times. We've been able to call some, you know, football teams that have gone on and won state championships and basketball teams that have been exciting as well. But it's just like, of course I have to miss out on the fan section, which is a ton of fun, but I have fun doing these broadcasts, like doing the play-by-play for a big game. There's nothing better than that. Like, you know, the energy of a big game and being able to, like, be the voice of that is just something that I really crave. And, you know, I think, like I said, people know what we do. They become a big fan of, you know, TATV in general. And it always feels nice to get a compliment about, like, great job. I love the broadcast. So, that definitely keeps it going. And, you know, I'm just excited for this spring sports season to get one last ride with TATV. We'll try and get as many lacrosse broadcasts out as we can. So, yeah, it's been super fun. It's definitely been one of the highlights of my high school time here at TA.
And now you're super famous around here. Walks around and teachers from all angles coming up. I love you, your stuff so much. But again, just one last serious point is, like, about X is, like, I've seen just your following, you know, and when Zach started doing it too, like, that's really where you start hitting it off. Like you said, Instagram is not a conversation. It's really just like a showpiece. But when you're doing this, the amount of comments I've seen over the last couple of years from you guys, especially from outside sources on Instagram or on X or on Twitter, that's really where you start making a name for yourself. So I would just say keep doing that as much as possible. Mm-hmm. It may not be, you may do a lot of tweets from a game that nobody's liking or whatever, but they notice that you're doing it. So I would just say keep that up. You know, now we're between you guys and where Cal is now, I have a good, like, triangle of places to visit, you know, from college sports or some minor league baseball. So I just
we got a dynasty going here.
We got to get someone on the West Coast. Maybe you'll send Troy out to the West Coast just so we can, you know, have somewhere else to visit. But any last thoughts, Zach?
Nah, it's great to talk to you again, Cole. You know, we've obviously, you know, for a long time, we spent, you and I and Jeff and Josh Pulsifer spent a lot of time doing broadcasts and spent a lot of our extra time outside of class and work and whatever we had to do this. And so it was obviously fun. It's sad to see the ride over, but, you know, I'm enjoying my time at Quinnipiac. I'm really excited for you going to Syracuse, and I know you're going to enjoy it over there. So, you know, obviously there's big things to come, but always.
Do you remember your first broadcast, Cole, for TATV?
So the first time I ever went on the air was halftime of a girls lacrosse game. You were like, you emailed me. You were like, "Do you have any interest in live game announcing? I know Zach's been doing that, so I'm like, sure, I'll come check it out." And I think, you know, my halftime thoughts consisted of, like, the more shots on goal that you get, the better chance that you have of winning, which is true. So, I think that was probably the first time I had ever watched a girls lacrosse game, and I had to give my thoughts on it at halftime, so it was a little bit nerve-wracking. I remember the first time, like, I had wanted to do play-by-play for a long time, like, before I even got into high school, and obviously never, like, actually did it until like sophomore year. And I did the color for Zach for a couple months. And then I tried play by play for the first time. And I'm like, this is way harder than I thought. Like, am I going to be able to do this? And then I went back and watched it and it was terrible. And so it's good to see that I've at least improved quite a bit over the last couple of years, but it was definitely a little discouraging at first to find out that it's not actually as easy as I pictured.
No, I remember that. I remember that lacrosse game because you came in and you had a look in your face like, I don't know, like the rules, like, what am I supposed to say? And I'm like, well, Hopefully we get some goals. And it's not just girls. I mean, field hockey and even some of the boys and girls across have different rules and everything. So, yeah, it's good. I would just say for anybody out there, just try it. You know, like you're not going to I'll just say this. I've been so fortunate between, you know, Tyler Catterett. We had Cal. We had you guys. Never once have anything gone out in the air that I was truly embarrassed about, you know, like maybe a small thing where I was like, hey, next time I wouldn't say it that way, but never once. And you know, you see it sometimes online where student announcers go back and say the wrong thing or whatever, but I don't know if it's because of my training. I've just been very lucky that you all have been as professional as possible for expected for high school kids. So I appreciate that. Let's not like jinx that and do that this spring.
Yeah.
You know, on your way out in your last lacrosse game, just drop whatever you want, your thoughts on something. So let's keep it PG. But it's been awesome.
I also think if you're a student that wants to get into broadcasting, like especially here at TA, I think the thing that's made me and Zach and Cal so successful and good at it is that we're all in and we all want to do this as a career. And it's not like maybe I'll show up for a couple of games here and there. Like we really have a passion for it and a drive for it. And like we spend time not even at the games, like preparing for them. I think that's what really makes you good is just being all in and actually wanting to do it, you know, full time.
Absolutely.
Yeah, for sure. Well, we want to thank Cole again for joining us. I had a great time talking to you and had some great conversations. And hopefully the Warriors maybe turn it around, Cole. We'll see what they do with
that. We'll have him back on before he goes to Syracuse for sure.
Of course. But yeah, thank you, Cole. And we'll see you soon.
Thanks, guys.
All right, we want to thank Cole Primus for coming in again and talking to us. We will very likely to see him again before he heads off to Syracuse next fall. But to finish up this episode, finishing up the same way we finished last episode, the take that has nothing to do with sports. Looking at what we have here in the notes, I think we're going to have two good ones this week. So, Jeff, why don't you start us off?
Yeah, so I got a little bit of interesting comments from mine last week. Look, the clip that you put out there, you know, someone commented on the YouTube, like, what is this guy talking about? This guy's the worst type of person. Look, I was not saying that, you know, standing up at the end of a plane super early is a great thing and you should be applauded and say, oh, the heck with you. No, I was just saying those people aren't the devil. The people who are devil are the ones who are just taking too long to get off a plane. That's really what I was saying. Anyway, this take, again, is about travel and air travel. And I promise this is not going to be a common theme. This just happens to be something I get really mad about. So I'm looking to do a trip next month over to Europe. I'm going to see Liverpool play, which is I'm really excited about. Anyway, so I'm looking to look at flights to get over there. The airline industry is such a scam, especially when it comes to pricing. Listen, and I have a prime example of this right now. So I need to go from Boston to London, right? And so I'm looking up all these different airlines, different flights, using Google Flights, Kayak, all these different sites. One of the examples was, this is a one-way ticket, Boston to Amsterdam with a layover in Amsterdam for a couple hours and then over to London. Okay, total price, you know, before you start getting the bags and fees and everything, $360. Like, okay, interesting.
Not too bad.
So I thought to myself, well, if I have a few days, why don't I just stay in Amsterdam for a couple, like for a day or two? No. And so Amsterdam's cool. I've never been there. So what if I'm like, all right, well, let me try to go Boston to Amsterdam. So I look up Boston to Amsterdam. Going from Boston to Amsterdam on the same exact plane flight of my two-legged flight to London, but I'm stopping in Amsterdam, $510. To continue to London is negative $160 from that. But to go directly, to get off the plane there and stay there, $150 more, $510. I literally was like, wait a minute. And no, same airline, same exact flight. You stop in Amsterdam and they say, no. You want to stay here. We need another $150. It doesn't make any sense. It's why they're just making up numbers all over the place. They have no idea what they're doing. They're just like, oh, you want to go to Amsterdam? It's going to cost you this. Oh, you want to continue on to London? Yeah, you can go there cheaper. It doesn't make any sense. I just the you know, when you're the, there's a lot of great things about flying. It's opened up the world to everybody, but boy, do they make things complicated. And when you're trying to do something like this, they just think you're stupid and you won't figure this stuff out. I'm still going to go, but I'm not going to go to Amsterdam for another $150. That's for sure.
Yeah, that's very interesting. That's very surprising. That's the way they do it. But honestly, for the longest time, when flights have been scheduled for me for vacations, it's been my parents. So I'm not someone who's having to worry about stuff like that. So you know, but probably in the future we'll have to. So you know, hopefully, maybe you can find another area of your trip to save money, and that way you can enjoy it a little more. But I'll head into my take now. Yeah. So mine this week is straying a little bit away from airplanes. My take is that The Office, the TV show, the sitcom, not sitcom, the more dry humor comedy TV show that aired for about 10 years, is not only was the best comedy TV show when it aired, was the best TV show, but is still 10-ish years later since it started, or maybe more than that, is still the best comedy TV show out there. Sitcom, dry humor, whatever type of comedy TV show you want to think of. I think the plot and the story is so unique, and I think they did it so well. I think there's a very good combination of like embarrassing, dry humor, funny, you know, type of comedy, also with some good moments, you know, some heartwarming emotional moments as well.
Yeah, so The Office is great. The last two seasons are awful. Like awful. Like that Nellie Bertram character, maybe the worst character in any sitcom of all time. So I'm still going to say Seinfeld's a little bit better. Now, I understand. I never really saw Friends, so I can't really speak to Friends. I never really watched it. So Seinfeld, conversely, like the first season of Seinfeld is not that great. Even some of the second season, not that great. Like the scenes are a lot longer. There's definitely some funny moments. But I would much rather have, like, if you're asking me which, you know, if you have one episode to watch, I'm probably going to pick a Seinfeld episode. I totally understand The Office. It's not a horrible take. The problem, I think for me, the problem with The Office, and I went with the Seinfeld, I've seen them so many times that when I'm on TV, I can kind of cherry pick which ones I want. Even the ones from the better seasons of The Office, which are the earlier seasons, sometimes the episodes are like, that was funny, but, you know, it's a different type of funny. For me, Seinfeld, you know, when you do Seinfeld, like seasons 3 through 6, every episode is a banger, and they got 4 or 5 stories going on. It ages well. We'll see about The Office, you know, another 10, 15, 20 years. We'll see if some of the references in The Office still make sense. Certainly during COVID, I watched so much Office. So I would put Seinfeld in The Office with a big space between number 3. But yeah, The Office, it's great. It's a security blanket. How many times do you look around on Netflix or Hulu and you're like, what am I going to watch tonight? And you're like, there's nothing really on. I'll just watch a few Office episodes. So I just don't know if the oversaturation may be a negative. Like, it's on TV, basically, on Comedy Central or Freeform all the time. And sometimes it's like, I don't really want to watch The Office. I've already seen that one 50 times. So that's the only negative to it. But yeah, it's a fantastic show. They should have ended it when Michael Scott left, but NBC was a little bit greedy and they wanted to make some more money. So there you go.
I mean, I agree. I think Seinfeld's great too. But you know, it's I'll stay with that. I'm always going to sit down and watch The Office, especially the new episodes. But that is going to do it for episode number 2 of The Main Rundown. Thank you all for listening, and all make sure to follow us on X and Instagram at The Main Rundown, or I think it might be actually the at Main Rundown Pod. But yeah, keep watching. We got some great clips that we'll be posting from this episode. And again, want to thank Cole and Jeff for coming on for this episode. But we will see you all very soon.